Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight is a living miracle. He grew up in Bloomfield Hills, became a journalist, and in January 2006, became a co-anchor of ABC Nightly News. 1 month later, he was nearly killed by a roadside bomb in Iraq. He suffered a traumatic brain injury and was in a coma for 35 days. He and his wife, Lee, published In an Instant, A Family's Journey of Love and Healing, detailing this experience and their road to recovery. His name, Bob Woodruff. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Our guest tonight is Bob Woodruff of ABC News. Bob, welcome. An honor and a treasure to have you. Thanks for coming.
Jack, thanks for even having me, I got to tell you. WJR is my favorite from when I was a little kid.
All of ours. First, welcome back home. And the first question I'm sure everybody wants to know is, how are you doing?
You know, it's good. I mean, you talk about this, it's unbelievable. This is coming up on more than 4.5 years since this happened. And the fact is that 4 years ago, even 3 years ago, I probably would not even be able to do this this program with you and have this conversation. You know, my language in the beginning was largely lost. My vocabulary was down to nothing. I couldn't remember the names of even my brothers. I've got three brothers and named them all Dave, the oldest brother of mine. That's the only one I could remember. And I couldn't remember the name of any of the states in our country and even any countries in the world. So now it's, I don't even know the percentage, but I would say it's a good 90% back.
Still today, when your wife Lee gives you a honey-do list that's real long, do you ever use the excuse of memory loss, Lee, I just forgot?
Oh, I use it all the time. I use it for everybody. If I can't remember their name, I use that too. If I forgot that I was supposed to pick up the kid from school, which I would have done even before, now I said I've got that excuse.
Talk to us about your childhood and your mom and your dad.
Oh, you know, I grew up in Birmingham, Michigan, which is just an amazing place. Of course, my mother and father have four sons, all of which what we really liked to do was either play sports or beat each other up about fights that we've had. I think we had a lot of stitches, let's put it that way. Going to school together, we had a little dog named Shannon, who I still to this day call it the best dog ever born, because that dog only wanted to play sports too, which has always been our love. But my parents are great. You know, our father is now 81 years old. My mom just had her birthday, September 1st, for her 77th birthday. You know, born in 1930 and then 1933, and they've been fantastic, fantastic parents.
Bob Woodruff, what's the biggest thing you learned from your mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
Wow, you should have given this before so I could put this list together. You know, my mother, I think if you're going to become a parent, although this is a good fight that I've got with my wife, you got to be good to your kids and don't discipline them too much. You know, let them make a lot of mistakes. And I think my mom gave us a lot of freedom, you know, to make those ourselves. My father, he stopped really beating us with a belt early on in our lives. Just kidding, Dad. If you're listening, I'm just joking. He's also been a guy that's really, I would say, in terms of sports and being young boys, he was the one that was our coach. I mean, he was the guy that was our coach not only in the backyard, but he's also the coach of our Little League baseball games, baseball teams and football teams. And he taught us how to play and how to do it with honor.
Bob Woodruff, how did you ever get into journalism?
Now, there's a long story. You can read the book if you want on that one, too. But, I started out as a lawyer when I got out of University of Michigan Law School, which is a fantastic place. And that was in 1989. And if you remember, 1987. There I am. I blame it. I got my excuse. 1987, got out of law school, and I went to New York to practice mergers and acquisitions with a big firm called Sherman & Sterling. But it was literally 2 weeks after I began working there that the market collapsed. It was bad, about 22% in the market that day, a decline. So it was, in some ways, in that sense, it was even worse than this last collapse of the economy. And right after that, there was really nothing to do. I mean, literally, we're not doing any more merging. There was no more acquiring, none of that because of what happened in the market. So I actually had studied Chinese when I was in at Michigan Law School and decided through some friends of mine or other Chinese students who had come to Michigan, I said, is there any way I can get a job, go teaching law over in Beijing? So took them about 2 days and got that nailed down and decided to go over to Beijing to go teach law and just proposed to my wife, Lee. And 2 days after we married, we moved over to China together. I never got to the journalism thing now, did I? So after that, when Tiananmen Square broke out at the end in 1989, less than a year since we lived there, we witnessed all of that. I got hired by CBS News as a translator. I had never seen journalism really much before other than reading newspapers and magazines and listening to you on radio. And so I decided to make the flip. I got completely addicted to covering Tiananmen Square overseas in a huge event. And I decided to bail, and Lee, my wife, actually took it.
What's the biggest thing you love about journalism?
You know, I sometimes explain this to people that I think when I was in the world of law, it was almost like a very deep but narrow tube that you have to learn all of these topics in big depth. Whereas in journalism, I think it's for a wide, flat. You know, every day is something else. You don't learn all the real big details, and you know, your experience in every topic is not something you've developed over years like it has other kinds of work. But I think every day is something different. And literally, you would wake up, and that would be, you know, a brand new thing you learn that day. And 5 o'clock that night, midnight that night, that's it. You move on to the next. Now, you got a specialty, of course, in a particular topic. I covered law in the beginning for the DOJ, Department of Justice, and then after that, a lot of wars. So I actually had expertise in certain things, but every day, every month, something different, which I loved.
We're talking about Woodruff, and on January 3rd of 06, he became the co-anchor of ABC's World News Tonight with Elizabeth Vargas. When we come back, we'll ask him about it. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Bob Woodruff of ABC News, and he and his wife published In an Instant, a family's journal of love and healing in February of 07. Bob, what's the basic message of that book?
Well, I think what we really wanted to do was to show people, you know, not only what is happening in this kind of situation in terms of the wars that we're in, to wake people up about how people are doing, you know, the families are doing. But the other one, of course, is, you know, the story of families to help what could be a miracle, you know, to recover from these sorts of things. You know, I think that you really need to have friends. I think you need people around you to come back. And it's to be, you know, life is what life is. But every once in a while, how many of you out there listening to this, you know, have family that have gone something similar? Not, of course, being blown up on a road in Iraq, but maybe have a father that just had a stroke, or had somebody who was just diagnosed with cancer, or maybe somebody lost a child. What is possible? What can you do if something like that happens to you? And the one thing that I know for sure is we know nothing about medicine. We don't know really what to be done, but I know one is what the mood of your mind is so much better if you're surrounded and loved by as many people as possible. And I think that's a lot of the message of the book because, you know, in this situation, I could not have asked for more.
When we get married, the man and the woman recite a little prayer to each other. And part of that is, in sickness and in health. What does that mean to you, Bob Woodruff, now?
That's, you know, health, I guess almost there's always assumption that you're going to have health. You know, and there's going to be moments where there's not. It is absolutely true that there's so many there's such a high rate of divorce in our country now compared to before. There's a huge numbers of divorce within the military because of these multiple deployments. Families that are away from each other for so long, and oftentimes when people come back, they all know that they've changed. The worst thing to do in a bad situation like that is to end the marriage. It takes work. Obviously, there are people that divorce in times that there's no sense to it. You know, why is it that you float? Maybe you were not meant for each other. Maybe you married the wrong person. But you give this promise when you marry that we're not going to bail out if we have a bad week or we have a bad year or even if we have a relatively bad rest of our life. People don't do this, but that's the hope, you know. And I sometimes I think about this with my wife Lee. Why didn't you leave me? Look what I've done to you. You know, of course didn't do this on purpose. It was not meant to be. But I sometimes wondered, wouldn't it be a lot easier for you to dump me and find someone else? Or maybe we should split up, go different direction. Because there's moments, of course, where it's really down. You know, it's been really difficult. It was a really long rehabilitation, which is not completely done, but relatively, you know, done. But she did not. And you have to wonder how much of that is based on what your promise was earlier, or just what your love turned into. But I know in this situation it has lasted, and I know that doesn't happen for a lot of, you know, for everybody. But I think it's you're better off if you can get through it to the next stage.
We're talking to Bob Woodruff. Let's change subjects. Talk to us about our young men and women and the job they're doing in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Well, you know, they are accomplishing a lot. They're actually doing things that are changing a lot of lives for a lot of people. You know, I spent time in both those countries in the days of Saddam and certainly the days of the time of the Taliban in Afghanistan. And first of all, the countries, you know, are better in many ways than they were before, and then, of course, in many ways that are worse. I mean, certainly violence has really changed both of those countries. But I'll tell you about the ones that are serving there. You can't forget that you're talking less than 2 million Americans that are now serving in these two huge wars. Compare it to Vietnam, which are really more like 10 million plus of serving because of the draft. So because it's a voluntary military, your 18-year-old son or even you at age 21 are going to be drafted or forced to be in the military because of what they're doing. And these wars have gone much further than we ever thought. 9/11 is coming up on its ninth year. Next year, this 10th year. They have multiple deployments because of the long these wars are, and they're serving, that they're doing multiple deployments. There's some guys that are on their third, fourth deployment. In fact, I've met other ones, special ops, that go for shorter period of times of deployments. They're on their ninth deployment. So they spend a lot of time away from people. They're the ones that are serving, and many of them are getting kinds of injuries that are not visible. The ones we're concentrating on in our foundation we set up is to try to get as much local community help for those that have come back with injuries that might be traumatic brain injury like I've got, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, or combat stress, and certainly those kinds of issues of divorce and others. But these are the guys that are serving, and you know the thing for us, we don't talk about the war. We talk about the warriors. And those, I think everybody needs to help.
Talk to us, Bob Woodruff, about our fallen and wounded heroes.
Well, you know, again, there's those wounded that everybody knows about. You know, I just literally just a few weeks ago in August, I went down to Bethesda Naval and Walter Reed, which is the main, of course, ICU levels for the kinds of injuries that come back. These are very much the visual, the ones that are visible, the kinds that have been injured, those that are amputees. You know, amputees have changed. You know, now there's a lot more because of these IEDs really on the rise in Afghanistan. The number of injured have doubled this year over last year. The IEDs have changed. There's now dismounting, which is the big thing. People are not so much driving as they did in Iraq and vehicles all the time. Now they're going out of the vehicles on the road, and that's raised not only the number of IEDs that they're getting hit by, but bigger impact because they're on their feet, not protected by any kind of vehicle metal. So now you see amputation with multiple amputation, which means not only guys that have lost one leg or one arm. I met some there, and and Walter Reed that are losing, have lost all of their limbs. Both legs gone, arms halfway through. And these guys are you know, being the best help ever. They're getting these kinds of, you know, new legs that they can walk with and arms that they can never use again. And then those in Bethesda Naval, of course, there's a rise in the number of brain injuries as well because, again, of these IEDs. So things are changing. You know, as these wars are going on, even after these wars are over, we're going to need as much as we can for those that have been injured like this to get their lives back to normal.
A while ago, I went to Walter Reed with a Brigadier General Jack Nicholson, and we went into 24 rooms and saw these amputees. Well, everyone that had all their limbs, Bob, they had one goal. Brigadier General, my troop was 24 when we went over, and now with me here, we're down to 19. I've got to get back to my team.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody that had a limb missing, hey, my troop comes back to Germany, Landsdorf in 4 weeks. I want to be on the tarmac saluting them when they come back. How do you explain that?
These are teams, you know. I know that's in so many cases, these guys, when they come back, they want to go back to their team. These are the guys that are still there in a place that is dangerous. And there's a kind of a slight, there's a slight addiction when you get used to these kinds of situations where you're so tight with the guys you're fighting with. You know, I've covered wars too for years, and I've got that same need. I would like to go back with my team. If it's not the same kind of team, but it's the same, to go back to these kinds of places, which I was somewhat addicted to as well for all that time. But I can't get my wife to give me the okay on that, or ABC News doesn't really want me to do it either. But it's interesting, you know, I went back and talks about the ones that are injured. Think about these guys serving. I did go back finally a year ago, actually a little bit more, about 14 months ago, back to Afghanistan for the one time with Admiral Mullen, Chairman Chief of Staff. I figured he had the best security. So we didn't, stayed on the base. But anyway, I saw a bunch of these guys, and he had them all raise their hand. And, you know, who's, how many on your first deployment? Everybody, hands go up. Second, third, fourth, hands still going up. Eighth deployment, another hand goes up. And I thought to myself, these guys are eighth deployment. Secondly, I've got 10-year-old twins. 10-year-old twins. Those guys right there serving the country, they were my kids' age on 9/11. So these guys have been in this world for a long period of time, and they do want to go back and fight with their team. I know, I'm sure you do too. You met a lot of those in there, Walter Reed, that don't want to go back, and they don't really even think about that so much. But there's certainly a lot that do.
We're talking to Bob Woodruff, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Bob Woodruff, a living miracle. Bob, January 3rd, 06, you and Elizabeth Vargas become the co-anchors of ABC World News. How did that happen?
Well, you know, that was a moment, as you know, that Peter Jennings had died of lung cancer. And when he did, they had to make a decision of who was going to follow. And the decision was that Elizabeth Vargas and I would become the co-anchors of World News Tonight. And, you know, this was the chance. For me, this is really the first time at ABC we've had a co-anchor of that. And it's always been single anchors before that. But the thing that was really appealing to me about that was my love of journalism was always, you know, being on the road, being outside the studio. And so this gave the chance, because with so much anchors, that if there's some story that's not, that's even gigantic, there's also risk that if you go to travel to that story, that there might be some other big breaking story, which means you got to rush back or someone else has to fill in to actually cover that as an anchor. But in this condition, we're able to be on the road while the other one is then covering the studio, being back in the place where there's some other story. So that was one thing that made us completely comfortable. And we were going to split it. Both of us would take out to the field and the other one would be in the studio.
You're on top of the world, and 26 days later, January 29th, 2006, on your fifth trip to Iraq and the first since you became the co-anchor, what happened?
What we were doing was the State of the Union was about to be held with in D.C., of course, with the president. And so Vargas was going to go down to D.C. and cover that while I was going to be overseas in Iraq, because one of the big topics of the State of the Union at that time was how we're doing in terms of the transfer of the power from the U.S. military over to the Iraqi military. So what we wanted to do was be with both teams working together, the U.S. and the Iraqi military. So we were actually in a tank, 8 vehicles all together, decided to go right out of Taji, which is just north of Baghdad, and drive down the road actually to on a project that they were working on. And as we're driving the road, literally we're in the front of the line of these 8 vehicles, and my cameraman Doug Vogt and I were out the top of the tank doing a stand-up. And as the palm trees on the side became closer and closer, the driver of this vehicle, we're in an Iraqi vehicle, they said, listen, we think that there must be a rising danger of IEDs. We probably ought to go down. But it was too late. Just a second later, there's actually a huge explosion of the IED about 20 feet away. The air blast came out first, followed by the rocks and the metal. We're knocked out instantly from the Air Force. I mean, by the blow of the air, and then fell down into the tank unconscious. I woke up just for a short period of time after that 1 minute, and I looked up and I saw Doug with blood coming down his face, and I asked him, "Are we alive?" And he said, "We're alive." And that's the last memory I had, because I was unconscious in a coma for the next 36 days.
Let's jump up 36 days later. And your wife, Lee, walks in like she did every morning into the hospital about 5:30. And this is from Guidepost. I quote her, "I pushed open the door into Bob's room. I froze. He was sitting up in bed, a huge smile on his face. He saw me, lifted his hands in the air, and said, 'Hey, sweetie, where have you been?'" That's chutzpah. That's chutzpah.
You know, Lee, about 95% of her wanted to hug me. About 5% wanted to strangle me for asking her where she's been for all this time. And then I got to tell you, you know, after that, you talk about inspiration. When Lee came in, you know, I felt so happy to see her, followed by my family. My brothers and my parents were there in Bethesda Naval area, right there in Bethesda, where I was for those 36 days. And every day they would come into my room and literally read books to me, whisper into my ears, hold my hands in the hope, the prayers that actually wake up. And so when I woke up, I mean, you've watched, there's a documentary that we put together about a year later about what happened to us on ABC. And you can see almost one of the first scenes of the wake up. You see my brother Dave, you know, who still lives here in Birmingham. And there he is on leaning on the bed, you know, laughing and great happiness. Which is what it was, you know. I think a lot of people say that this kind of recovery without family, you know, surrounding you, being with you at those moments is going to slow down that recovery. There's no scientific or medical reason for that, but I really believe that it's true.
When you prayed that day to God, Bob Woodruff, what did you say to him?
The day that I woke up, I think a lot of it was thankful. I think a lot of it was, in many ways, an increase in the amount of belief that I had. A lot of it didn't really make sense, you know, that we literally got hit not only by that air, but there was blasts of rocks that were surrounding this IED that actually pierced all the way through, shattered my left jaw. Another one's still in there, about the size of a marble. It's still stuck in there, too close to the nerve to actually take out. There's another one that literally went across the entire distance from the left all the way through past my esophagus, from my veins and arteries, and ended up in the artery on the far right, 1 millimeter away. And for some reason, none of that hit any of those things. The rocks passed in front of my eye. It pierced, and some of them still, little pieces are still on the left side of my nose. All of these, for some reason, missed, which, again, doesn't make much sense. But, you know, for many of this, were, you know, my brothers and I were really, and my wife were really on a mission, you know, to try to help those other ones injured in the war to also get through this also with miracles.
Talk to us about what it was like seeing your 4 children.
You know, I can, you know, not only did I forget the names of my brothers, except my older brother Dave, as I really couldn't remember the names of my kids. I remember the name of my wife Lee. If I can remember properly, I think I can remember I knew I had at least 2 kids, but I could not even remember that I had my twins. And they were 6 years old at this time. And I could not remember that I even had twins. That's how much this brain, the neurons of the brain, had separated. And that's pretty much what I remember back then. I just could not remember much.
Have you met the doctors that worked on you in the green zone within 40 minutes of the accident?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You'll see some of them that we've also written about and talked about and met. At the time of that explosion, by the way, there were not even medics there. These guys are all carrying the kind of medical equipment to actually save the lives of people, no matter what your rank is. In any of the platoon you might be with, any unit, the might squad that you're with has all these kinds of things to stop bleeding. And these guys literally had to stop the bleeding of my neck that was pumping out so fast they had to hold their fingers over. The first two guys to actually put their fingers over that to stop the bleeding was first Omar, who's our translator. He's a guy that worked for the U.S. military young Iraqi guy for the first 4 years, first with the Marines and then with the Army. I was with the 4th Infantry during this. But he did it first. And then he handed it over to my producer, Vinny Malhotra, who then stopped it until then after that another captain came in and stopped it and kept it going until they were able to, you know, cover it with some kind of like real medical tape.
The greatest sporting event in American history, many people believe, is that 1980 USA hockey team.
Right.
And you recall at the end of the last game, Al Michaels asked us a very famous question: do you believe in miracles? Bob Woodruff, do you believe in miracles?
I believe in miracles. I know that miracles happen. The one thing we will never understand, I think, until maybe one day long from now, hopefully longer than it could be, is it's impossible to know the reason for why there are miracles for X but not for Y. To this day, I think we just don't know. Why is it that these amazing people who served for the country and acted with such maturity and morale for all that time are badly injured in the war? Why does that make sense? Why is it that those actually committed crimes and abused people end up perfectly fine? There's no sense to that. We'll find a reason someday for why there are miracles, but I just don't think we have any idea to know now.
God's ways are not our ways. We're talking to Bob Woodruff, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with a living miracle, Bob Woodruff. Bob, talk to us about the nurses and the therapists, the caregivers of these wounded heroes.
Well, if you go back to the nurses that they were over there in Iraq and then in Langstuhl in Germany that helped to get us back, I mean, they are just the most amazing people. In fact, I've spoken to four of the nurses that were there in Balad, which is the main medical part of Iraq, where that's actually where they helped, actually where they took over 16 centimeters of my skull to try to save my brain within less than 2 hours after we were hit. And they were living in the place in Balad back then in 2006, which was still almost literally a tent. And while they're doing surgery on me, these nurses and these doctors and these medics, that they actually have body protection on and helmets while they're doing that, taking this huge risk to save the lives of so many others. And then the nurses, they were back in Bethesda Naval where I was, they would come into my room every day and the whole time to make sure I was okay. Then in terms of talking about therapists, there's physical therapists and there's speech therapists. I was mostly needing speech therapists because I lost so many of my words early on, and they committed to, spent their time, you know, trying to teach me the English language again, bring back those words by literally sitting there and reading with me for hour after hour.
Traumatic brain injury. Mm. It's the signature injury of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Many believe that 10% of the 1.5 million soldiers that have been there have it. Talk to us about traumatic brain injury.
Well, it's a word that I never even heard of before this happened. But it's actually been huge in our country, even before we started seeing so much of this in wars. But basically, it's the impact on the brain, which sometimes very visible in my condition, where they did have to take part of the skull off. And then others where you can't really see it because it's, again, it's kind of the air blast of the explosion where they're not actually cut and scarred. They're just simply shaken around so the brain goes back and forth inside, splitting apart various parts of the brain, including neurons and so on. They have to come back over time. But the fact is that traumatic brain injury has been studied in our country and treated for decades. People that have been in car crashes or been hit by a baseball bat. You know, this has been going on for a long time. So a lot of these guys in the war, when they came back, you know, the VA and others didn't really know a lot about TBI, but a lot of their local hospitals probably did. You know, I'm sure right here in Detroit, you know, Beaumont and others probably have been dealing with it for years. So a lot of these guys that were vets when they came back injured, one of our missions was to get them to the best hospital they can in their town to get treated over a long period of time.
Your brother Dave and wife Lee started the Bob Woodruff Family Fund for Traumatic Brain Injury. Website, bobwoodrufffamilyfund.org.
Actually, no, that's been changed. It's now the bobwoodrufffoundation.com.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'm going to get the right one out there.
Foundation.com. Talk to us about that foundation.
What we saw is that it is true. What I said earlier is that the ICU medical care for those that are injured in the war are phenomenal. I mean, my life would not have been changed if I was not being treated by the military medical because they knew exactly what to do with an IED explosion. But the problem has been that we see is that those families, after they go through ICU, then they got long-term rehabilitation that they now need to get. That means going home. They got to go back home to their community and spend their time with their family, probably for the rest of their life. Now, this might be far away from any kind of national military care. So there's a lot of other things that are needed, and sometimes for these invisible injuries, not many people recognize perfectly well. So we created this foundation to try to find the gaps between what the government is doing compared to what needs to be and what's being done locally, and find someone in between, local charities that are helping them in any way they can. And we're actually doing the fundraising to make as much money as we can for them, and then vetting all of these local charities, see which ones are efficient, which ones are legit, and then fund them with the share of the money that we've raised through that foundation. And it's been incredibly successful.
How much have you raised?
Already, $8 million. Hmm. And we're having a huge fundraiser in New York again this year in November. We've got Bruce Springsteen's coming back again. This will be his fourth year in a row to play in the Beacon Theater in New York, and we've also got, believe it or not, Jon Stewart is going to be the MC. We have got also Seinfeld has now said he's going to come too, and it also Tony Bennett is also going to come out and play. Can you imagine all those guys on one stage for this? 2-hour-long event, so people have to come in and buy these really damn expensive tickets, and then they can go.
Give us the foundation again.
Well, it's the bobwoodrufffoundation.com, or you can actually also see it under remind.org. Remind people what they're doing.
God works in strange ways. Bob Woodruff, what are you doing now?
Well, now I'm back at ABC. I'm reporting. I'm on World News Tonight and Good Morning America and Nightline. I'm doing long-term in-depth stories for various programs. We've also been on 2020. So ABC's been amazing, too. I'm completely back with them and still reporting as a journalist, spend a lot of time with my kids and my wife as long as I can, and then spending a lot of time on this foundation to try to help those who have been injured in the war.
You and Lee were very close to David and Melanie Bloom, and we lost David Bloom in 2003. How's Melanie and her family doing?
Melanie's been amazing. The kids are back. They're actually her twins, the same age as my daughter Catherine, who's just turned 16. And of course, you know, her cousin Ellie, who's Dave's daughter, about the same age, all of them. And then they've got a younger one, a daughter, who's also the same as my twins, and they're doing great. The amazing thing about her, Melanie's just, she was, interestingly, you know, Lee basically lived with the Blooms after this happened. She moved into their house because Melanie's going through the death of her husband. And now is her turn. Melanie, when I was hit, she came over to Longstreet with my brother Dave and my brother-in-law and spent all that time with us. So she did that in the other way. And she finally remarried, too.
True.
Yep. To a brother Rice guy.
Wow.
She's not from Michigan. She married a guy from Birmingham. So he passed the test.
You've said that you have far less fear of dying now compared to what you felt before. Why?
Well, you know, I think when you face that possibility that you're almost there, you're talking about David Bloom. I've also said that I think a lot of people in this situation, they go down into this line, against this line, and some go over the line and some bounce back from the line. So I bounced back and David did not. And I'm thinking, I was that close to the line. And that line wasn't so bad. So in that sense, I've kind of, in a sense, I was knocked unconscious when I was hit, like immediately, and I felt no pain. You know, I don't think it's so bad. You know, I really think it's going to be quite peaceful.
As our time together ends, and I thank you again for coming, talk to our listeners who are going through challenges right now, Bob Woodruff.
You know, I think you have to look at life, as you know, is a short moment for us. And you think about all these, not just the miracles of the world, but the beautiful parts of nature and part of your life. And just spend as much time as you possibly can with those family around you, your kids when you can. Go see beautiful parts of the country and the world. And just remember that life is pretty magical, you know, to be where we are and what we're doing. And I think the more time you have a chance to spend with your family, I now come back more often to Birmingham from New York to see my family, especially my parents, and my mom, who's now going through Alzheimer's. So, you know, the more time I can spend with them, the better it is. And I think there's lots of busy times of your life, but I think calm down here and there, you know, be mellow, be peaceful, and get through your day in a way that's not nearly as stressful as other moments. And I think they go up in numbers as you spend time with your family.
Thanks for inspiring us. Thanks for teaching us. Keep up the great work.
Jack, thanks so much.
And best of luck on your golf game.
I'm not good at that one.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.